All right, we are live. Welcome to another episode of Roasting Marshmallows. My name is Rolf Suet, and I'm your host. So W. Edwards Deming has said that 95% of variation in the performance of a system is caused by the system itself, and only 5% is caused by the people. Organizations can be considered systems, so in a way, it is amazing that a lot of time and effort is spent in improving individual performance, while so much more could be improved by looking at the organization or the system in itself. In order to do so, one could start looking into systems thinking. Systems thinking is a holistic approach to analysis that focuses on the way that a system's individual parts are related to each other, and how systems work over time and within the context of larger systems. This is opposed to the classic divide and conquer pattern, where systems are broken down in separate elements for further study. Systems thinking has been around for a long time. It actually originated in 1956 when Professor Jay Forrester founded the Systems Dynamic Group at MIT Sloan School of Management. And someone who applies system thinking in his day-to-day job is our guest for today, Gerard Jansen. Gerard has the conviction that people, teams, and organizations can and want to do more than what they are doing now, that there is unleashed potential, and that there are ways in which we can achieve more, do more, and get more satisfaction from working together. Gerard currently is active as IT area lead at Transavia, and he seeks to build delivery organizations and to inspire leadership, not followership. Welcome, Gerard.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So, what do you think of the introduction? Did I?
It's okay? It's great. Yeah, sure it is. Yeah. Yeah, system thinking has been one of my inspirations for a number of years. And like you said, it's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it still mystifies me why it hasn't been more present in organizations and thinking of how people think about organizations.
All right, so we'll be talking about that a little bit later, because first I need to introduce my two other guests, which are, of course, Henk and Arno, two regulars here. Welcome, guys. How are you doing?
Thanks. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Coming from the studio today, so that's nice.
Yeah, normally I would introduce you separately, but you're cozy up in there.
It's like a sauna here, but I wouldn't call it cozy.
That's later on that we get more close.
Okay. So are you guys very experienced with systems thinking?
Yeah. I watched a YouTube video for an hour, so I consider myself quite the expert.
Well, I have read a few books for the past, I think, 3 to 4 years that I'm getting deeper and deeper. And I also had this year a course with actually Kent Beck, and I forgot the other person in the course. System Thinks focus more on like on the development team of things. So, yeah, okay. I also like a lot the subject.
All right. Well, nice. So hopefully we can have a cool discussion about it. So Gerard, could you maybe first explain to us and maybe the listener what is systems thinking?
Sure. Well, systems thinking is about looking at, well, an organization or a team or even just a group of people, looking at it from a more holistic perspective. Like you said in the intro, we're used to break down the things that we see. And we learned that in school, make things small, think about very simple cause and effect relations. If I do this, then that happens. While in reality, it's much more complex than that. And the things that you do today have an effect tomorrow, maybe next week or next year, that you can hardly anticipate. So system thinking is about trying to see what happens from a holistic perspective.
Yeah, and so someone asked me today, like, what it, like, if I could give like a simple example, and I saw this YouTube video about this guy who explained it by, you know, you have a car, and a car has an engine and wheels and a whole bunch of other stuff. So the engine doesn't bring you anywhere, the wheel doesn't bring you anywhere, but like if you combine these things, you can actually go places. Is that like an okay way to summarize systems thinking?
It is. Only it you forget the aspect of complexity, because a car is a complicated thing, right, with lots of moving parts, but it is quite deterministic. If you put down the gas pedal, you speed off. If you hit the brakes, you slow down. If you hit the steering wheel, it's predictable. And most systems have a limited aspect of predictability.
Okay.
They are influenced from the outside or from within in ways that we cannot particularly anticipate. And they have emergent properties, which in a way you have with a car, but for instance, a human body has emergent properties that you would not anticipate from looking at the individual pieces.
Yeah.
So, okay. when you talk about, let's say, the complicated example of a car, are you also like describing the way how this, I guess, the Skinefin framework talk about complexity, complicated, chaotic,
and exactly that. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that that people forget about when they think about how to organize a team or set up an organization. And this Kinefin framework makes a distinction between very simple or obvious situations, more complicated situations where you need to think, okay, what's the best practice here, and complex situations where you cannot anticipate what will work, or even chaotic situations where you just have to act and more or less hope for the best.
But what do you mean by forget? Do you mean forget the framework or forget the systems thinking?
How often do you have a discussion with somebody about what's the best practice here?
Yeah.
And then we need to apply this best practice, or we need to do let's say test-driven development, right? That's a best practice. And you've probably been in a discussion about what test coverage you need. And there's lots of teams that have said, we need to do 100% test coverage. But that's not really necessary in all cases, right? You need to, it depends. And I also see it, exactly. So rather think about saying what's the best practice, you need to think about what are good practices and think about the context in which you want to apply them. So I think it was Dan North who once said it, a pattern is a solution within a context. And that's what I always try to apply. If I think about, okay, might this thing that we've done before work, then it depends on which context you want to apply it to.
Yeah. Okay, and how is it different than normal thinking? I don't know the correct term.
Conventional
thinking. Linear thinking, because there's no difference to me. At least I don't understand the thinking subject too much, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've seen the podcast for an hour, right?
Yeah. That makes me an expert-ish.
Expert-ish. All right. Let's see. I've seen a lot of, let's say, architect folks, right? That say we need to apply these kind of architectures, and it always is the same, or we always need to comply to certain agreements. We need to set rules and boundaries for a team. Yep. And I say, yeah, sure, you need boundaries, but you cannot upfront predict if what the problem that the team is trying to solve fits within that boundary.
Yeah.
So the boundary that you give to different teams should be different, and you should anticipate that the team has to break out of the boundary to solve their real problem. So it's and the other thing is that because you cannot predict it, right? You give input to the system, and you think that it will behave one way, but some other stuff might happen, and you can have side effects. Well, you can have side effects.
I think I have an example actually. I think as an example of I think what you're saying about like this. The concept of context, right? Like, so there is a context, and sometimes you give boundary. And let's say in the open source, the way how they build software, they all rely very much on pull request. And then because it works very well in that context of open source with teams distributed everywhere, where there is no per se like a concept of a team, then it works brilliant. And then people want to apply this inside of a company as well. So every development team you go, they also work in pull request. Mm-hmm. And that's the way how they used to collaborate. And basically creates unintended consequences, right? Basically because the collaboration is shorter, creates more merge conflicts, creates more issues in the longer run, because they are applying a technique that is very useful in a specific context, to the context of a team that should trust each other, should collaborate more. And I think this is an example of context being important and unintended consequences that actually happens that people don't foresee. And there is a delay into this problem that basically increases with time, right? So that means your release gets slower and then a bunch of other unintended consequences. Does it make sense?
It sure it does, yeah. Because you forget about the context, that it's different, and it has a different effect on the system that you're working with. right? Or another example would be if you would focus more on software quality and put pressure on a team to deliver less, better quality software, less bugs, or more predictable on time. And you keep telling them, look at this, do that, comply to these rules. Then in the short run, that might help, right? Teams might deliver a little bit better software. But it will also lead to complacency. People think, hey, I'm not going to think for myself anymore. I'm just going to stick to these rules. And over time, you will see that they don't keep up with new standards, new developments in the market. And as a whole, that company might get left behind.
Exactly. And how does sound speaking help for this? How does it help? In linear process, you could still say the same, I think. Like, okay, you see the problem. People dive deep in the quality and then they just neglect it or whatever. But the root cause could still be, okay, the manager is pushing some stuff down or whoever, causing that effect. Mm-hmm. How is that different from system thinking then?
In linear thinking, and I'm paraphrasing here, right? I'm making it a little bit oversimplifying. In limited thinking, you say, okay, I have this problem, this is my solution, and if I apply it, then we're done.
Okay.
And you don't take the step back to see, okay, what is the effect? Or what's happening today? Might this be the cause of something we did a year ago or 6 months ago? So you're not trying to see what happens in always in a larger context. If it's a larger context of the organization or a larger context of time, that you need to be aware of.
So the idea is to break out your boundaries that you can see of the problem space. Can I
exactly
say it like that?
Yeah.
And look at the unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think it's also to think that there is more ways than just one. So you can map one linear way, but if you just stop it there, you are missing, you're becoming blind around all the other contexts around it that you are not foreseeing, because you found the root cause, what you think is the root cause, but because you did not. I think the system things also help to draw that, right? Like making a visual way that you can have a conversation about the unintended consequences. Yeah. That it can map it.
But how would you get the system like within your vision? Because if you're a team in an organization responsible for, let's say, a small part of maybe the entire ecosystem, where does the systems thinking boundaries are for you as a team member? Like, is it easy to apply in a large organization, or is it super complex and really hard to map out in your day-to-day job?
Yes and no. Everybody can do it, because you can start thinking about relationships that you have with other people, even outside the team. It is hard because we're not used to it. Like I mentioned in the beginning, in school, we are used to, or we are drilled to reason reductionistic, right? To make the problem smaller and smaller, to separate out the different pieces. While system thinking works exactly the other way around. So that makes it hard, but you can apply it. Like you can think about, okay, what kind of interactions do I have with my direct teammates, and how does that work? What do I see there? Mm-hmm. Or what interactions do I have with another team that we work closely together, or is maybe in another country altogether? And how do those interactions work? What's the effect of them being remote or in another time zone? And how does that influence the things that we do? What makes it different from a team that's sitting right next to us?
I don't understand this part of what you mentioned. Like, okay, when you are in school, they help us or teach us, drill on us, like how to break it down in smaller pieces. That part I can understand. But like, how is that system think the other way around?
I'm a beta nerd. I studied chemistry, right? So I did a lot of experiments in high school and in university. And if you do an experiment, so you think you have a problem, you have an hypothesis about how the problem might be built up and how you can solve it, and you design an experiment and you are thought to change only one parameter.
Yeah.
And if I do this, what's the effect? And if I do that, what's the effect? And then you can do correlation, statistical stuff, etc. But because you can only change one parameter, that makes it a very controlled experiment. But in reality, in a day-to-day world or teamwork in organizations, you can't do that. There's so many moving parts. And system thinking is not that deterministic. It asks you to keep an open eye, constantly keep an open eye for things that you may have forgotten, that you may need to pull in. And when you think about systems, you talk about systems, the goal is not to get to a final diagram or a final understanding, but to grow understanding, to talk with each other and try to see what may be relevant, what you may have overlooked or that haven't seen before.
So would you say then the system thinking should only be used for complex environments, not per se complicated environments? Or would it apply to also simple things and chaotic things?
It would apply into all those kind of situations, but it's in what situation do you need a tool like system thinking? Right, if the problem is deterministic, then you don't need to look at the system.
Sorry.
So if I need to lift something heavy, then I need a crane, right? And I need a crane of a certain force, certain strength. So then, that's you can calculate that. You don't have to think about, what's the weather like at that point? Or how many people are looking at the lifting of that heavy stuff? Mm-hmm. So you don't need to look at more parts of that system.
So where are actually the boundaries of this? Because I think it's asked before, but I think it's a bit confusing. So let's say you are within the team and you go with test-driven development and you get to, I don't know, 100%, that's a requirement, and you have unintended side effects, I get that. But you want to expand outside of those boundaries, because where's the limit? Is this about, I don't know, maybe vertical or business section of the organization? Is this about the whole organization or just a group of people? Is there?
You talk and you think about those things that you think matter at that moment in time that you want to grow your understanding. So if you take the boundaries too big, you get lost in all kinds of things that are not relevant. So you start exploring. So you start, is this relevant? Well, maybe, maybe not. And it's always a matter of gut feeling, whether you take things into account or not.
And I think the boundary is also, sorry to interrupt, but it's more like as well on the, you can invite people for the conversation, right? So that means you can start with your team, and the moment that there are places that, I don't understand this and my manager does, then you can invite your manager and that boundary can grow. I don't think it's there is a limit to the boundary, but of course you don't want to map, there is no point of mapping the whole system, but it's more like you need to look from the point of view of, I want to answer a question and then why this is not happening. I think that's a positive way of looking at the problem.
And if you're thinking about the effect of test-driven development on your team, then at first it doesn't make sense to think about the role of the CEO of the company, if it's a big company, right? That's probably not relevant.
Why not?
That's what my gut feeling says, right? Because he's probably not. If you have a company of a couple thousand people, then the CEO is probably not involved in development level practices like test-driven development.
No, but I can think of a lot of,
reasons.
Unexpected outcomes, but in side effects that actually leads to the CEO to say no to test-driven development, actually.
Mm-hmm. So that might be a part of your analysis eventually.
Okay.
But would you start there? You start small and...
Then again, where's the boundary in this? Because if you want to solve the issue, I'd say, let's say the test-driven development isn't not the problem per se, but you want to solve some sort of problem with test-driven development. Mm-hmm. But your environment doesn't allow it or some other reason, and you go one level up, maybe it's a manager, you go one level up, where does this stop? Because in the end, you want to maybe find a root cause to solve it.
That's the problem. There is no root cause.
Okay, so how do you solve it then?
Experimentation.
Exactly. So if you think about the system and you want to solve a problem or a question, at some point you get to an hypothesis, right? So this might be what's happening. This might be our reality. And if you don't like the reality, you start tinkering, you start changing it by doing an experiment.
Right, and the problem isn't like an individual in the process, but it's like several things playing together, which is causing certain issues, which is why it's hard to identify a root cause, because it's probably multiple things interacting with each other, having a certain outcome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if we talk about how you analyze things in situations in system thinking, maybe it's time to look at the what they call the levels of perspective.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So looking at the system, looking at your reality, that starts by the things that just happen, events, right?
Yeah.
And everything that happens are loose, events, loose things. But if things reoccur, then you may see certain patterns. And I like to compare it with Scrum. Most techies know about that. The daily Scrum on Monday is just a daily Scrum on Monday. And the daily Scrum on Tuesday is just that. Because there's an agreement for the team to convene at, let's say, 9 o'clock in the team room or on Zoom, that's where a pattern evolves, right? You can know that they are there every morning at the same time, at the same place. And one level above that is the level of structure. So these patterns, they connect with each other into a structure, a set of agreements, be that a process agreement or an organizational structure agreement, that allow you to make even more sense of what's happening. So you have the daily Scrum, you have your retrospective, you have your sprint review, etc. That all combines into the structure of how a team works. And one level above that, another higher perspective, is the level of mental models or convictions. How we look at the world, what we think about, what we see, what we observe. And I think this is a very interesting notion, the mental model, because we as human beings, we have words for certain things, but each and every one of us have a different understanding. If I talk about Scrum, I have probably a different understanding about what you guys have, or somebody who's just a novice in the world of Scrum. Or you mentioned Ken Beck. He probably has an even better understanding than all of us combined. So what he thinks about Scrum or Agile is way different from what we think about it.
Right.
And a lot of confusion in organizations and between people, it can also be in your personal relations, is about how do we see the things that happen? How do we look at the events, the patterns, the structures, and the mental models?
So is that like, for example, certain events happen that I might perceive as being great, being awesome, but then he might experience those as, being decremental to his work, and that's where like the mismatch come from? Is that how I should be seeing it?
Yeah. Or you think that in this event or in this meeting, we should do X and everything, but we should try to accomplish Y. Or the purpose of this meeting is something different that you have in mind. So you start doing things deconstructively.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and I think the first time that I experienced a little bit of this idea of, let's say, a system, right, was like, I think, one of my first jobs as a developer. And they basically were forcing us to push features because we need to deliver in time. And because of that, of course, quality got some became less of a focus. And then eventually we get a lot of requests for assistance on bugs. And then that means we had less time. And then eventually we shipped the product that increased the amount of requests for assistance and then becomes this reinforcement loop. And you basically, we understand this by vicious circles, right? More push, more pressure, less quality, more bugs, more push. And then we are in this circle that keeps reinforcing itself and it never ends unless you automatically try to change the system.
So exactly.
The question I have to you then is like, how do you change the system? Or how you break that circle?
Well, you need some kind of intervention. And what intervention you do, or how you intervene, that depends on how you understand the system. So you mentioned those causal loops, those reinforcing loops. There's a technique also with the system thinking called causal loop diagrams, where you visualize how things interrelate and how things reinforce or balance each other. And you can use those kind of diagrams as a way to grow your understanding. So if you understand how pressure to finish the work for a certain deadline influences the quality, and how that quality causes more bugs, that more bugs cause you to spend more time in support and answering calls from customers, which leads to less time available, etc. That kind of causality. And the time that you have available over time for new features decreases.
Yeah.
And as long as you do not have a shared understanding that this vicious cycle exists, then it's hard to gain support for a way to intervene in that. Or to find a solution that will actually work. And so you can cause these ways of reasoning, these causal loop diagrams, to make sure that the relationships become visible to everybody involved, even to management who doesn't understand that maybe, and then to form an experiment.
And this is something you did with teams, or do you have like an actual example?
Take
out of it.
Well, we at one of my former clients, we had these kind of discussions where we talked about quality and how to create more time for the team to invest in quality. I worked at a client where they had neglected life cycle management, security, all kind of quality aspects for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we invested in getting all the systems, all the software, all the hardware up to date.
Help you there? Is it something, a discussion you had with a manager, like the middle management or with the C-level or with teams, or how did that work? How did it work out?
In this case, we had a discussion with C-level and with the business. Because the business had been pushing.
You know this problem deep down in the unintended side effect, I would say? And from there on, you went building it up all the way to C-level.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And we were assisted by some catastrophic outages and security breaches. So the system helped us. Right. Once you have to go to.
It's like, do you start mapping, or I don't know if I'm using the right term, but like, do you start mapping the system alone, and then you go bring this to the people and you show to them, or do you invite them to help you out? How does this process
work? You use these kind of tools to gain a collective understanding. So it works best if you are, for instance, in front of a whiteboard or Miro or mural, and you start mapping it out together. And you have a dialogue, a conversation about what you think that you see. Because the way I look at the system, from my perspective, that's not reality. Nobody has reality in mind, because we all have different viewpoints and different experiences.
Yeah.
And you don't have to take your causal loop diagram all the way up to management, because it helps you gain an understanding. And once you understand what's going on and what may be a rightful intervention, then you can take that suggestion to management or to a team.
But I was wondering, because we mentioned experimentation a little bit and levels of perspective and indeed the causal loop diagram. And you said like, okay, we had some catastrophic outages that, you know, really made us think about the system as a whole. But I can also imagine that, you know, engineers or even management says like, okay, we don't have time to actually, you know, do this exercise because we're having catastrophic outages here. So, yeah, I don't really care about levels of perspective. We need to, get it stable. Is that something like, do you sometimes get that kinds of responses or do people indeed see like, oh, no, we need to have a shared full understanding of everything that is in play here?
Well, when the house is on fire, you don't discuss the color of the paint on the walls, right?
Right. Yeah.
So you first fix those outages. Yeah, it's going to be pretty bad. Yeah. So you finish that, and then you find so you solve those issues, yeah. And then you start some discussions, and there's always time for that, right?
Well, it depends on the number of outages. Because aren't you in that same cycle then? You have the outages because you, I don't know, like Rick explained before, like at the end it's a circle which goes to the same pattern. So either it's on fire or not, you have to break it. So I'm not so sure if that's how you, I don't know, right?
So I think the point is it doesn't matter when you do it, but somebody then has to intervene, right?
Yeah.
And somebody has to start this conversation.
In most organizations, there's always time for a root cause analysis or an after action review, right? And one of my other heroes is W. H. Debbing, known for the Plan, Do, Check, Act idea. I always keep explaining that to my clients. So it stands for Plan, Do, Check, Act. Most organizations just plan. Sometimes they do. They hardly check, let alone act. And later on in his life, Deming said, wait a minute, I said check, but it should be study. So we plan, we do, and then we study, we look carefully about what happened. Mm-hmm. And from that better understanding, we act and we change our way of working, our processes, our system. And I think the difference between checking, which is like just validation. Did it work? Yeah, okay, let's move on. And studying and taking the time to gain an understanding, that's crucial.
Yeah.
And you use these after action reviews or root cause analysis specifically for these kinds of situations or for this kind of better understanding of what happened.
But I don't find
sometimes
the fact that you, for example, like, because at least in some of the literature that I read, they basically kind of split between, let's say, system thinking as there is no such a thing as a root cause, right? At least that's what I understand. So if I would do, let's say I'm a system thinker, I go to my company and say, hey, let's do a root analysis cause, but there is no root cause for it. You understand my question? It's not a question. It's more like, is root cause the right term?
It probably isn't, but sometimes you have to. You have to move with the system.
Okay.
And if you start discussing posing questions with everything, every lingo that the company uses, then you're a know-it-all, and they won't listen.
Okay. Yeah.
You go with what's there, and you build upon that. And when you do system thinking, you don't have the aim to just solve the problem, but to try to improve the system, to do an experiment to see, okay, if we change this, what will happen?
Yeah.
And sometimes things deteriorate.
Yeah.
And that's one of the I think the fundamental tenets of a system. You don't understand it completely ever. So, and when you push on the system will start pushing back.
What do you mean with that?
Eric just mentioned this vicious circle, right, where things deteriorate over time. And then you might think, oh, wait a minute, let's do an intervention. Let's send everybody off to a test-driven development class or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we solved it. But then people may think, okay, so we need to do test-driven development. Uh, well, let's do 100% test coverage. And then your productivity also goes down because they spend way too much time on writing tests that don't make any sense. So the system has also a way to respond to the interventions that you do in a way that you can't always anticipate.
And
one of the other sort of rules or ideas behind system thinking is if you change the system or you do an intervention, things always improve before they go bad. So there's all kind of solutions that feel good in the short term, but on the long term have a worsening effect that you cannot anticipate.
That's something you had experience with. So do you have like a war story on this?
Wow,
I'm judging by the reaction a lot, huh?
Well, we do.
We do, but I'm not the guest, huh?
Well, we keep talking about this test-driven development, but a long time ago, I worked with a client, and I was asked to help on a project where our team developed a new website for that client, and they used an Ajax framework. It's way back. And that framework didn't have any test coverage. But the team we're all about quality, so we need test coverage. So they started writing tests for that external framework.
Yeah.
And then they were surprised that our client got mad because for 8 weeks they hadn't delivered any software.
Well, they did, just for the other company.
Exactly.
Nice open source contributions right there, I suppose.
Yeah.
Is every company okay with the experimentation mindset and like, okay, let's apply systems thinking and try to study stuff and let's do some experiments to see what happens, like because I can imagine that certain financial institutions might be a bit scary of these kinds of suggestions, like, so not only the system can push back but maybe even the organization itself.
Yeah, that's I haven't really run into that yet, but I've been given that feedback. Like, experimentation mindset might be like, oh, we're just trying to do something here. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also a matter of having a good conversation with people involved, because we're trying to do something, right? An experiment is an idea or a hypothesis that you have, how you can improve stuff.
Yeah, and it might be a different level of perspective for them, right? Because they might see the experiment as setting the house on fire to see what happens, but that might not necessarily be a good experiment, right?
Yeah,
like, not all experiments are dangerous.
An experiment has to be safe to fail. Controlled if it is not safe to fail, that's also not an experiment. Then you are basically...
But that might not be the perspective that some sort of a C-level person might have about the word experiment in the software that they're selling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, but if you think about what a framework like Scrum is doing, it's basically constant experimentation.
Yeah,
we have an hypothesis. We think we can do this in the current sprint or in the next sprint. Let's try to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good thing about Scrum, that it doesn't say we're constantly experimenting. But that's what you're doing.
It wouldn't be adopted, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, probably not.
They're going to change that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned Scrum quite a bit, because when I was Googling a bit on systems thinking, like one of the first hits that I got was on the SAFe, the Scaled Agile Framework stuff.
Are we going there?
Well, that is the question here, because we've actually had an episode on SAFe that we had someone with positive vibes towards SAFe, although and he can and Arno feel differently. And as a host, it's easy for me to say, like, well, I'm unbiased, you know. But what's your opinion on that?
Yeah,
is it unrelated?
No. There's a lot of good stuff in SAFe. One of the things that makes me irritated about SAFe and the SAFe books is, like, they pretend they were the ones who made everything up,
right,
while they just borrow a lot of knowledge and a lot of mental models from other areas.
Okay.
And a lot of what's there in SAFe makes sense when it's applied in the right context. And that's my beef with SAFe. They sort of pretend that their big solution applies to practically all contexts.
Yeah. Every enterprise.
And yeah, and that's just not the case. And just like Scrum doesn't apply to every context, or Kanban, or Less, or whatever. But if you're talking about Less, large-scale Scrum, they rely heavily on system thinking as well. They lose everything that they, if you follow their courses, they try to explain the principles of Less and Scrum with causal loop diagrams. So, yeah, okay. The fact that SAFe doesn't use, that SAFe uses system thinking doesn't make SAFe good or system thinking bad.
Right. No, but it was just interesting to, that it comes up there, Googling for systems thinking, and then bam, you know, SAFe pops his head up again. It's like,
but I think that's called search engine optimization.
Yeah.
There's a correlation, but not a causation, right?
And there is a system there too, yes. Right? So that means if you put words that people Google it, eventually SAFe is going to be there.
I think they're luring you to a certification there, but that's okay.
I do have now like a bit of a conflict in my head. Last week we had another podcast with a guy, Niels, and he was talking about work the system. And maybe I misunderstood him, but he said something like, why study the system? Why just not work the system? So why to bother to try to understand how the system works and not just work it? And yeah, work it. That's his words. Maybe I'm paraphrasing, improve it. Like, do you have, maybe it's hard for you because you don't get the context, but like, if I just say these words, like, does that make sense to you or not at all?
Yeah, I heard that podcast and I know Niels a bit. Actually, I just hired him, so I'm gonna have a firm talk with him about that subject. But I think, you should work in the system and also on the system. But if you talk about what's happening, about what components there are in the system, then you find better solutions, better interventions. Right? And if we go back to the notion of mental models, of how we perceive the things that happen in our world, in our organization, we all have a different mental model of the same thing. I always compare that with the sweet potato analogy. If I ask you guys to think about a white... Yeah, you don't know that. No. But you will in a bit. If I ask you guys to think about a white billiard ball, then I think we have the same image in mind, right? It's white, obviously, and the diameter is... And it's round, it's a sphere. If I ask you to think about a sweet potato, then we all have a different thing in mind. Just buy a bag of sweet potatoes in the grocery store and you'll see the diversity of shapes that these things have. And I think that's the same with ideas that we discuss in organizations, in relationships. We think we talk about the same thing, but we have a different sweet potato in mind. Yeah. It may be round or it may be long, it may be big, or it may even be... that you have these white denticles around it because it's about to hatch, right? There's all kinds of different ways that you can look at a certain thing. And when you engage in a conversation about it, you start understanding why somebody is talking about a certain aspect of the organization, why they are doing that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you should think about the system, talk about the system, try to understand what's happening there, but also understand why somebody, where they are coming from, what their perspective is.
And about these relationships that you mentioned with systems thinking, you just mentioned that you also had a child and a family. Do you also apply systems thinking in your personal life? Or is that guaranteed to cause fights at home?
No,
I'm pretty sure there are a lot of side effects there.
Well, we don't have a whiteboard at home, thank God. I'm not that nerdy, but my girlfriend and I, we spend a lot of time trying to understand where we're coming from and trying to understand why we think differently about certain subjects.
Okay.
And because you start to understand where the other person is coming from, what events in their past has made them think about certain things the same way, mm-hmm. right? It's like Christmas. For her, that's the biggest event of the year, and for me, it's hell.
So also the biggest event of the year.
They just have two different sweet potatoes.
Ah, different context. I get it.
Exactly. Yeah. So in her childhood, Christmas had a completely different meaning than it had in my childhood.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then you need to understand what's happening there, what your perspectives is and your experiences are to.
So in this example,
to come to a solution.
I have three kids, young kids as well, and well, I see certain behavior which I don't really like, but mm-hmm. I think I'm part of the problem and part of that system. And how do you break out of that cycle? Because just thinking about it, for me, it's not enough. I know this is just not enough. I cannot think where I'm going wrong or what my root cause of the issue is. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, you should.
Yeah, so I
I should ditch my kids. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. Well, that intervention is not really an option, right?
I think I'm part of the system, and I don't know how to break out of it. Like, okay, how to figure out what causes my behavior, which causes these side effects? Because I see the
But you probably talk about it.
Yes.
You probably talk about it with your spouse or with your friends.
Yeah, but he's also part
so
of the same
you ask...
model.
Mm-hmm. But your friends are not.
That's true, so I should find... But that's also what it makes it hard, because they are not really close enough to what we face, I think. Is it enough? Well, maybe... Is it enough for them to realize what the issue might be? Or what the... Well, root cause is a bad word, but let's go with it. The cause could be.
I can't predict if it's enough, of course, but it will certainly help you get a better understanding. And a better sense of different perspectives that may be there. And when I talk with my friends about what my children do, and you also notice that their children are just different.
Yeah.
But you can get an understanding of how they raise their children and apply that to your own family.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but what I was trying to say is about, like, in a way, like, we are trying to search for root cause as being like judgmental about this is a bad thing, right? And like, mm-hmm. I think as Heather said, it is an event happened, and doesn't mean this is good or bad. It's like the sweet potato analogy. It's a sweet potato. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's shaped square or round, it's a sweet potato. And the emotional value that we put to it, it can be positive or negative, but doesn't mean that there is a root cause with something to change. And it's just to get the understanding of, oh, this happened. This is why it happened. If it is going to be negative or positive, well, for his girlfriend, Christmas is positive. For him, is negative. But in the end, it's an event.
Yeah.
So I think that's more it. You try to figure out what happens. If you don't go judgmental to it, then you get more clarity out of it.
Yeah, I think you're totally right there. And it's about being non-judgmental. Thinking about the situation, about the things that happen, to gain an understanding, not... because you want to judge it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how then do you verify if an experimentation brought you closer to your desired outcome or further away? Because you need to have some sort of a conclusion from an experiment, right? It might, like, judgment might not be a good word, but maybe it doesn't apply there. But, mm-hmm. You know, you're going to do an experiment, hopefully, either in your family or maybe in your work. Something happens, and then you can say as a team or as a person or as a company, like, okay, we like the outcome or we dislike it. So there's inherently a judgment there as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. You sort of measure or you evaluate what happens.
Yeah.
And up front, you may think about, okay, if these things happen, then we think it's the experiment is a success. And if the other thing happened, then, yeah, it's... not what we anticipated.
Right. Yeah.
But running an experiment, being deliberate about it, it gives you information, it gives you feedback about your intervention.
Yeah.
So then in that respect, if you think about it up front, then that experiment also always has value, mm-hmm. Because it also learns you what doesn't work.
And do you need to think of these things up front? Like, okay, we're going to do this experiment, and it's going to be a success if X, Y, Z happens, or it's going to be, you know, not a success if this and that happens. Do you need to have that information up front? Because that might be really mm-hmm. difficult to think of.
Sure, it is difficult. But if you do it, it does help you evaluate the experiment, and it also helps you think about designing the experiment. If we do this, can we evaluate, can we measure, can we create hard or warm data? Right? Can we put numbers to the things that we've done, mm-hmm. or can we to put warm data, like Nora Bateson calls it? Can we evaluate how people feel about it in the end? Yeah. And if you say if we try this and the entire team or a part of the organization feels better, mm-hmm. then that's a success.
Yeah.
And if your kids start behaving better, then that's a success. Can you quantify that? Probably not, but or maybe it's the number of times you have to put them in the naughty corner, right?
Yeah.
How much are emotionally triggered?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Cool. So, Arno, are you going to experiment with your kids now?
I do that all the time, so the system thinking doesn't change that, to be honest.
Well, the problem is, then do you know the unintended consequences?
Yes, there are a lot of them.
Yeah, but are you mapping them too?
No, that's not true. No, maybe I should write them down. I need the whiteboard, I guess.
I think
the tip there for the
If
day.
You need that, I can go to your house and map it for you.
Mm-hmm. So let's say I listen to this podcast and I want to try the systems thinking in my organization. Like, how where do I start? We already talked a bit about levels of perspective and maybe get some causal loop diagrams. But is that also where you start, or is there a different way of going about?
There's a lot of things you can do. The field of system thinking is very, very broad. But one of the tips that I can give is a kind of an oldie, an older book by Peter Senge about the learning organization. It's called The Fifth Discipline. And that has a very, very thorough explanation of how you think about systems, how people affect it, how organizations can grow and learn. And it's very, very well readable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I read that book, then... okay. You read the book, Henk?
Yeah, that was a pretty nice, easy book to understand the basics, I would say.
Okay. And did you also ever come to a situation or an organization where it just didn't work, where you just couldn't, you know, map out the system, or where you just could not get the relationships clear, or?
It's very often it is difficult. Yeah. To convince people to start thinking in this way and start using these tools.
Okay.
And that's one of my personal frustrations. Because to do it properly, mm-hmm. and we touched upon that before, you need to take time. You need to sit back and say, okay, let's talk about this. Let's engage in a dialogue mm-hmm. without a focus of getting to a solution, making a decision. Yeah. And that, in a lot of organizations, we are outcome or result or decision focused.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I always find a couple of people to start doing this with.
Okay.
And it helps.
Yeah, so the you start, like, let's say you book a meeting with a few persons, and then the end result of that meeting is that you probably need a few more meetings and that you've written down some of the systems, and then... Some people might be disappointed, saying that this is a waste of time.
And like, maybe.
And do you spend time trying to convince these people, or is there no real way to convince them other than hopefully getting them to the realization later on that okay, this was mm-hmm. what it was all about?
Yeah, that's at least what I try. So I spend time and I try to plant the seeds.
Yeah,
but it's not something that I want to push. Upon a team or a management team, because I don't think that works. People need to be open for it. Yeah. But my entry in most organizations, you have agile coaches, And these are the kind of people that are very much open to thinking about, how systems work, how these ideas work.
Okay.
Yeah, so you experience a lot of people who are interested in the subject.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And what was for you the first trigger to get into systems thinking? Did we touch upon that as well?
I'm not sure anymore. It sort of happened, right? I recall my high school graduation essay for Dutch, where I sort of, in hindsight, did a holistic essay. I think the book I just mentioned, I read that about 15 years ago, and then a couple of years ago I reread it, and then I realized how much of my thinking could be traced back to that book. Yeah.
Okay, it's just in there then, I guess, for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's part of your system thinking now.
I think we'll take a moment just to see where we end up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know. Do you guys have any more questions for Gerard? Or Gerard, you might maybe have some questions for us.
Yeah, do you think you guys will want to start doing this in your own organization?
For me, yes, definitely. Because, well, I saw the YouTube and I definitely think it's fascinating. So I'm probably going to invest time on this as well. So I like the tip on the book.
Cool.
I think I'll put it on my big list of things I should read. So, but I'm definitely going to look into it. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the thing is, you already did start, because I remember you having a conversation, especially about this list of books, where you say, like, well, I need to change my environment, to change my system, to read more books, right? Because you know that your books, so you are in front of the TV, so in front of the TV, you're going to prioritize the TV over the book. So, in a way, you already started, you just don't have probably the vocabulary for...
Yeah, and for me as well, like a lot of the things that we've talked about today make a lot of sense to me, like, you know, the reinforcement loops and like that experimentation is a good thing, and indeed, people's perspectives are different. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff just makes sense for me. So I for sure want to experiment learn a bit more about systems thinking and try to apply it in my work and also in my daily life as well. It sounds super interesting.
Great.
Yeah,
and I guess for me it's the same. I want to continue and try to preach a bit. I guess preaching is the word to people to like, hey, this exists. Mm. And, so I'm quite happy that you could join us and help to spread the word as well on this system thinking. And thanks a lot.
Great.
Yeah, so indeed, Gerard, thank you very much. I also want to thank the listener as well for chiming in as always. Thanks for listening. And if you guys want to start with systems thinking as well, then, get some nice tips in this episode. We'll put the name of the book and the author in the description of this episode. Gerard, thank you very much for being here. And
thank you.
Arno and Henrique as well. Thank you guys for always showing up and giving your opinions. Very much appreciated.
That's easy.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this episode, I suppose. I'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot and see you later. Bye-bye.